small businesses employ a lot of Alaskans, how are they doing in the state's down economy? Is it harder for a small business to weather a downturn, or does being small mean more flexibility to try other business avenues for survival? Can a cooler business climate present opportunities? Online fundraising has changed how many entrepreneurs plan and execute a new business idea. So what does that mean for small operators? Business startups, local investing, and Alaska's commerce future is our discussion today on Talk of Alaska.
Talk of Alaska is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters.
Hello, it's Talk of Alaska. I'm Lori Townsend. For a very long time, if you wanted to start a business, you had about two pathways. Get your family and friends to pony up some cash, or write up a business plan and a budget, and go sweat it out at the bank and make your best pitch. Now there are other pathways, and some of them can be very lucrative for the right idea. Successful YouTube channels pay content providers a portion of ad revenue if they gain enough subscribers. And crowdfunding through various sites like Kickstarter or GoFundMe have helped a lot of creative people get funds for projects that they may have never been able to get through more traditional financing. Tomorrow, an Anchorage conference called Vitalize Alaska will work to help Alaskans better understand how to finance and build their small business. And we're talking about it today. In the studio is Amy Pearl. Amy is the Director of Community Development for Seed Pay Hatch Innovation. She is an expert in helping people develop small business chops in underserved communities. Hi, Amy.
Hi. Good to be here.
I hope that's an okay descriptor
for... That was
for,
just fine.
...for the work
we'll,
that you do.
We'll fix it later.
All right. And, all right. You can better describe.
It's very
your
difficult
work.
To do, so we'll...
And that's what we're going to be talking about today, is what Amy's work involves. We also have Jasmine Smith. Jasmine runs the Business Boutique that helps local people with everything from business plans to taxes. Jasmine was voted one of the top 40 under 40 by the Alaska Journal of Commerce last year. And she's got other ventures going that we'll learn more about. Hi, Jasmine.
Hey, how are you?
Thanks for being here. And we also have a second Amy. Amy Cortez is a journalist.
One is never enough.
That's right. That's absolutely the case today, especially. Amy Cortez is a journalist, and her book, Loca Vesting, grew out of a New York Times magazine story about local investment in local businesses. Hi.
Hi. Happy to be here.
Thanks so much. You can also join the conversation, Alaskans. Have you had success yourself raising money online for a new business startup? How did you do it? Do you have an idea but no money and wonder how to get it off the ground? Give us a call, 1-800-478-8255. That's statewide, 1-800-478-8255. In Anchorage, the number is 550-8422, 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. So, Vitalize Alaska starts tomorrow, or takes place tomorrow. Amy Pearl, let's start with you. What is your role in this conference, and what are you hoping to accomplish while you're here?
Well, that's a great question. My role while I'm here, I was brought up by Rachel Miller of the Alaska Pacific University. Thank you for that. And to talk mostly about Alaska's new investment crowdfunding law. So we're not talking about Kickstarter or GoFundMe. We're talking about Alaska's new, very cool, exciting opportunity to raise investment money from Alaskans. So my hope is to get people excited about it, talk more about how you can find out more, and see if we can't get a group of folks to give it a shot.
All right. Well, and I look forward to having that fleshed out a little more as we go forward in the conversation. So, Jasmine, let's see. You're working right here in Anchorage, mm-hmm. helping small businesses. What do they tell you are their biggest challenges in getting started?
Well, I think it's the age-old conversation of accessing capital. I think overall, that's always a big one. How do you access money for your business when you're trying to get started? I've also found from personal experience and just working with so many clients in different communities, you know, especially in an economically disadvantaged communities, it's not just a problem of accessing the capital. It's knowing how to use the capital once you get it and knowing how to make it last. So sometimes you can't access the money, then when you finally get the money, there's that fear of, I'm not going to get it again. So I want to make sure I do the right thing with it and make it stretch as far as possible.
All right. Thanks so much for that. And we'll learn more about that as we go forward today as well. If you're just joining us, this is Talk of Alaska. We are talking about investing in small business. And we have some experts in that regard in the studio with us. Amy Cortez is an author and journalist of Loca Vesting. I have such a hard time saying that. I don't know why.
Well, think of it like locavores. Eat a local diet. This is investing that way.
All right. Maybe that'll help it stay in my mind. Amy Pearl is the director of community development for SeedPay, is that right?
It's very confusing. Actually, yes. Yeah, so that part actually is a less relevant. In fact, both Amy Cortez and I are co-founders of, among with a few other folks, of a new nonprofit that's probably the most pertinent reason and the sort of backup for why we're here, called the National Coalition for Community Capital. So I ran a nonprofit for the last 14 years and have just recently moved to this new company called SeedPay. But the Hatch Innovation was the name of the nonprofit. And during that period of time, our goal as a nonprofit is to help people start companies that improve communities. So our focus was on social entrepreneurs, but there's just no money for that kind of thing. So we got involved in alternative capital and got interested in these investment crowdfunding laws that were happening across the country. So it turned out, oddly, though I'm not a lawyer, nor am I a finance guy, I'm not even a guy, I ended up getting involved to the point where I drafted Oregon's law. So I became kind of an expert, a somewhat reluctant expert, but the work that we've been doing across the country with under-resourced communities, Native communities, rural communities, around this idea of in communities investing in themselves legally and with regulatory support, which is pretty transformative. It's there are 38 states in the country right now that have created these laws, and Alaska is one of them. So all of you listening, I want you to say to yourself, I am an investor.
Fantastic. Amy Cortez, a quote about your book, Loca Vesting, says, if Michael Pollan changed the way you think about food, let Amy Cortez change the way you think about finance. So local, local, local is the message, I guess.
Yeah, it's local. I do take a broader, I look at community more broadly these days. It can be a community of, you know, affinity or interest as well as the place that you live. But just for a little background, when I got interested in writing the book, it was during the financial crisis. And as a journalist, I saw that people were fed up with Wall Street and they were looking to move their money from Wall Street into Main Street and to try and help rebuild their communities that had just been devastated by the financial crisis and the mortgage meltdown. But the thing is, there were very few ways to do that. So I started hearing about things like bringing back local stock exchanges. And who even knew that we used to have 36 local and regional stock exchanges that served their regional economy in this country? The last one in Tacoma closed, I think, in the 70s, but, you know, in the not too distant past. And we've lost so many things like that. So I got very interested.
So now it's all concentrated on Wall Street.
Exactly. And as we know, Wall Street is not investing in small local businesses, in underrepresented communities, in social enterprises. So a lot of things are starting to change, but I think we still have that fundamental problem that Jasmine mentioned, access to capital, and especially for communities that are you know, not in Silicon Valley or, you know, New York City or doing a, you know, super high growth, you know, unicorn track startup.
If you're just joining us, this is Talk of Alaska. We're talking about investing locally and how maybe you can get involved in being an investor yourself. You can reach us statewide at 1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-TALK. In Anchorage, it's 550-8422, 550-8422. You can also email us talk@alaskapublic.org. So, Jasmine, when I did the introduction, I was talking about, you know, you can sweat it going to the bank. You can try to get your family to help you out. What do you find with folks that you're working with here in Anchorage and maybe in other parts of the state? Where are they finding startup money for their business ideas?
You know, it's interesting. I would say when I go back to like my experience with it, a lot of us, we really weren't able to go to the bank, or we didn't know an investor. We didn't know the language, the speak. We didn't know GoFundMe, Kickstarter, all that kind of stuff. So a lot of them honestly just worked a second or third job, and all the money from that second or third job went towards starting their business. Or we put on, you know, events, or we put on fundraising pre-campaigns just within our family and friends to help us support that. I mean, that happens a lot in you know, parts of our minority community where we pool our resources. So we all put our money towards this restaurant. That restaurant goes good. We work in that restaurant. And then when that one's good, we leverage that one to open the second restaurant. So it's a different hustle mentality, just because there's not that notion that you're going to be able to go to the bank and they're going to say yes anyways, or we don't even know the fundamentals of what good credit is or what they look for in credit. So we've had to just be creative from working more hours, pooling money between family and friends, putting on events to promote, you know, your expenses. I would say just the concept of GoFundMe was new. I did that one when I started the Business Boutique Training Center, and that in itself was like a whole foreign world of me even asking, because I was like, I'll just get a fourth job and I'll just do it that way. So it's a different mentality to even have to ask and learn to navigate that.
So the idea of crowdfunding has been around much longer than the term.
Yeah, I mean, we call it family funding, neighborhood funding. It wasn't online with a cool name, but we've been doing that because that, like, again, you know, unfortunately, in a lot of the communities that I serve, and even in my own family and background, going to the bank, and that just wasn't an option. So we, you know, I would say what they say, they've been crowdfunding. It just hasn't been called crowdfunding. It's family and friend funding. Mm-hmm.
Well, I want to talk a little more and kind of unpack the idea of the concentration on Wall Street and what changes. But first, I wanted to go to an email question that maybe, Jasmine, you can help with. This is someone who said, Cynthia said that she can't call in this morning, but she wanted to know about where can people go to find a consultant to help them. And so your business offers some of those services. Mm-hmm. Tell us about that.
So, the Business Boutique, we're licensed and accredited small business development consultants. We have a focus on cultural diversity and serving underrepresented communities. So our model is build from within. I can help you start a business, or I can kind of show you the importance of starting a business and how that empowers your community, whether your goal is to be a millionaire or your goal is to make $8,000 a month and just be able to pay your bills. So the Business Boutique, we do consulting. We work a lot with the SBDC and the SBA. We actually have a really good relationship with them. If it's somebody that's like brand spanking new and they need that like ground zero real talk, they'll send them to us. If it's somebody where there might be like a cultural barrier, maybe they're like a refugee or they're from a certain neighborhood and they need more of that real approach, they'll send them to us. So I'd say, you know, she can definitely go to SBDC, SBA, or the Business Boutique, you know, give us a call. You know, we travel around the state and go where we have to go.
Have you worked with small businesses in the 8A program?
A little bit. Not so much. I think a lot of our stuff are kind of before that. We do help some of them do their paperwork, and we get there and we kind of check in on them. But we work a lot with like the beginning, like you're just getting started. How do you flesh it out? Or the businesses that have been operating for years, but they like never had a plan. They just kind of jumped into it. And now they're like, wait a minute, I need help. So we kind of focus there.
Okay. Amy Cortez, you were talking about how at one point in time there were regional stock exchanges. What changes, other than a concentration of power in one place, what else changes when these regional entities go away?
Yeah, well, I think as we saw during the financial crisis, one thing that exposed was how shallow our economy really is, right? It had been hollowed out by globalization, offshoring, a whole host of things. And, you know, the basic business of making things and serving people had, you know, sort of gone away. So I think there's been, you know, one very encouraging thing is that over the past 5 or 10 years since then, there's been, I see, a new energy in local economies, in cities and states that are really doing great things and trying to, you know, address those root problems and grow their own economies. And that's the only way we're going to have a strong national economy is by having strong local economies. So some of that is coming back, but it takes a concerted effort. And, you know, as they say, it takes a village. People like Jasmine, people like Amy, SBDCs, accelerators, you know, the whole ecosystem.
Do you think policy-wise, the lessons that came out of that financial meltdown with the real estate market and all the other things that were sort of rippled out because of that, have those lessons been learned and incorporated through policy? I see the two Amys smiling at each other.
I'd say no.
I'd say no, too.
Amy Pearl, no?
No. I think it's, you know, the universe hasn't changed that much. I think in terms of what you expect, what people want out of, you know, the Wall Street's designed to make money and it attracts people who want to make money. So it's a different framework, I think.
And so it seems as if based on that the local strength then is even more important if there's not a big shift in policy that can safeguard against a possible large scale meltdown again in the future, then local strength would help guard against that.
Absolutely. And I think if we had stronger local economies 10 years ago, in 2008, 2009, it would not have been as severe. But, you know, the other side to your question is that politically, I think, you know, people are recognizing that very little can get done at this moment at the federal level. States and local governments have a lot more leeway to actually get things done. And they are, you know, as the, you know, as it's long been said, they're the laboratories of democracy.
All right, let's go to the phones for a moment. Kurt is in Anchorage. Hi, Kurt.
Hi, Lori. Thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I have two questions related to the topic, and I would be eager to hear what your guests have to say. I'm planning to write my business plan this fall. I'm finishing up a PhD, and once that's done in mid-September, I'm planning to write the business plan and then go on the hunt for startup capital. And I'm filled with some trepidation about it because I don't really know where to go or how to begin that process of looking for money, for capital. And I guess the second question is, I'm also interested in finding a mentor sort of slash consultant, someone with experience in business that can guide me through some of the likely problems or pitfalls that await me. I want this to be successful, and I'd like some mentoring or consulting help so that I, you know, don't make what are probably common mistakes for someone starting a business. And so those are my two questions. Where do you go to look for startup capital? And I have to say, I think I made my phone call to you right when one of your guests was talking about where you go to get for money. So I think I may have missed that part.
All right, well, let's...
I was calling and I had to turn the radio down to talk to Wesley. Anyway, yep. Those are my two questions.
All right. Thank you so much, Kurt, for the call. You can also join our conversation if you have questions, if you have comments. As Kurt did, he raised a couple of questions. 1-800-478-8255 is the number statewide. 1-800-478-8255. In Anchorage, it's 550-8422. 550-8422. And you can email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. Amy Pearl, Kurt raised two questions. Where can he find funding? And also, where can he get consulting? We may have an answer for him on the consulting side. What's the answer about local investment?
Well, I think the first thing to do with Kurt is somewhat classic, is to say, what kind of company are you looking to create?
Exactly.
So if it's a tech company or medical or getting your PhD, is it in some sort of groovy engineering, something that's going to scale quickly and attract venture capital or angel money, then, you know, do your business plan and look for high net worth individuals to help you do that. And then they actually can be the mentors, and they're invested in your company and they're interested in seeing it grow. If it's the kind of company that it's a smaller, locally grounded company, probably not a super fast scaling company, then yeah, it's turn this over to Jasmine.
Yeah, I think we're on the same page with that. I mean, no, the first thing is going to be, what kind of business is it? And that's going to kind of determine and govern what direction you should go in. In terms of Anchorage in Alaska, I mean, there are a lot of really great groups that do. I mean, there's 49 State Angel Fund, there's the Accelerator Fund. You could always pitch it at Million Cups on Wednesday. There's a lot of opportunities to get in front of the right people who might have the funding. And of course, if you have stellar credit, you can always go to one of the banks or one of the SBA loan specialists. So there's a lot of options. I think it would be a matter of looking at your business plan, looking at your business goals, and just kind of seeing where you are financially, personally, and then kind of determining from there what's the best approach. In terms of consulting, you know, there's SBDC, SBA, Business Boutique, you know, we can all pretty much help you. I think the good thing with the consulting is, I think people sometimes think consulting always is just exactly what you want to hear in business, but sometimes a key part in consulting is we got to put some truth to it, and it might slightly change the direction of your business, but I can promise you in the long run, better than having us make you chase a rabbit hole, it's better to have a concrete plan. So, you know, we can totally help. Just give us a call, find us on Facebook or...
All right, and we'll put some links on,
yeah, yeah,
on our website, alaskapublic.org, with this post that can help people find those places. I wanted to get back to the first part of what your answer was, Amy Pearl, about if it's a business that may scale quickly, the idea of reaching out to investors. How do people find them? How do they even know where to look for someone who might have cash that they're wanting to invest?
Well, so I think Jasmine just listed there are angel funds, but
sure.
Let's just check the data here. So the truth is that probably fewer than 1% of all companies that are ever created or imagined will qualify or be of interest to angel groups or venture capital. So really the bulk of the companies that we're looking at are those who are, you know, 99 plus, the kinds of companies that need to find capital somewhere else. So the thing that's interesting now about Alaska's new crowd investing law is that it's sort of in the middle, right? So you're appealing to people publicly for investment capital, and you can create the terms of your offering yourself. The entrepreneur decides what kind of terms he wants or she wants, whether it's equity or debt or revenue sharing. It's all kinds of creativity that can happen. And then that entrepreneur will then put things online or pitch to in public events, which is, you know, before friends and family was okay, or pitching to very wealthy folks, but this was illegal before these laws have come into effect. So if you are an entrepreneur and you're looking for growth capital or even startup capital, and you can be a corporation or an LLC, you can use this new law to raise up to $1 million. And it's really easy to use, extraordinarily easy to use. It's one of the easiest to use laws in the country. So the folks in Oregon are very jealous of Alaska, even though we've been very successful. It's a really interesting place to raise capital now. And to find out more, you would go to about Vitalize Alaska, where you can learn more tomorrow at the SBDC website, but also the Division of Finance and regulation at the state has a lot of information and a couple of FAQs. But if this is the first time you've ever heard about that, individual people, ordinary people, anyone who lives in Alaska can invest in your company up to $10,000. So $1,000,010.
And
pretty amazing.
Tomorrow at the Vitalize Alaska conference, the two of you, the two Amys, mm-hmm. will be doing a session together. What's your mission for that? What will you be focusing on? Is it this new law? Is it?
Well, Amy's first. She said to go off. It will be two sessions, and then we're actually doing a workshop.
Okay.
Right. So I am more or less going to set the stage and talk about some of the themes from my book and some of the things that I've seen as I've been covering this, from a national and even international perspective over the last several years. So I would say that the theme of my talk is really how communities are coming together to solve their own problems, and that includes investing in themselves when, you know, others will not. So it's sort of a message of empowerment and resiliency. And I'll look at some of the examples of how people are doing this in other places, talk about crowdfunding, in addition to the Alaska law that Amy mentioned. There's also a pretty major federal law that was passed called the Jobs Act, and that was signed by President Obama in 2012. And just it took several years for it to kind of, you know, trickle into place. But as of 2 years ago, it was fully implemented, and it's been pretty darn successful to date. There have been more than 1,000 crowdfunded offerings across the state, and they've raised, I had numbers here somewhere, but I think $130 million. The average raise is about $250,000. And actually, the investors are doing pretty well as well. People think of it as equity crowdfunding, but these offerings can also be debt. It could be a loan or even a revenue sharing agreement. And a lot of those deals have paid people back already. So, without waiting for an exit, you know, of some sort, meaning a public offering or being acquired by someone. So I think that national law shows the potential that you have here in Alaska. And as Amy mentioned, it's a much simpler law, much less costly to do. So if I was an Alaskan entrepreneur, that's what I'd be looking at.
Did you want to add to that?
Definitely.
As far as the presentation tomorrow?
Well, I think, Amy's on it around 10, and then I think I'm on at 2-ish, something like that, 1-ish. And so we'll get into more detail about what's happened in Oregon. So I'm kind of here telling the Oregon story. We've made a lot of headway. We also, made a lot of mistakes, but the kind of thing we can help get Alaska off to a good start. So we'll talk about the details there and then answer questions. And I also have two guests on my panel who, including Penny Gage from the state, but a couple of folks, Laura Oden and Kyle, who Amburo from the two successful Kickstarter crowdfunding campaigns. And so we'll kind of shift from talking about what does it mean to do a crowdfunding campaign, you know, in and of itself, there's challenges there. And then what does it mean to do an actual investment crowdfunding campaign? So it'll be really a lively and interesting panel because I'm going to talk them into doing investment crowdfunding. We'll see.
All right. We're talking about investing small in your local community, your local neighbors who are trying to get businesses off the ground. We're going to talk more about that as Talk of Alaska continues statewide.
Today's program is underwritten in part by Matson, committed to the communities it serves, building on more than 50 years of service to the communities of Alaska. Learn more at matson.com.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. We are talking about investing in small local businesses in your community. You can join our conversation. We're going to learn more about this new law in Alaska. Who knew? You can call 1-800-478-8255 if you have questions statewide. 1-800-478-8255 or 1-800-478-TALK. In Anchorage, the number is 550-8422. 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. Okay, so I'm going to admit to some ignorance here. You heard it here live on radio that I did not know about the new law. So please, Amy Pearl, tell me about the law in my own state.
Okay, I know. It's funny.
I was going to try to fake my way through it.
I can tell. Her eyebrows are going up like, wait, what? What are you? Wait a minute. So let's just clearly say there's crowdfunding is just a mechanism where lots of people put money in some fashion to a project or a company. So crowdfunding means lots of things. And it's so just to say, you know, full disclosure, this is completely complicated and ridiculous because, you know, it's still very new across the country. So what we're talking about is crowdfunding that's actually a real investment. And that means you're giving your money to someone else in the hopes that you will get more back, some amount that's an increase. So in Alaska, so again, there's 38 states who have passed these laws. They're either laws or rules, and they're all slightly different. But Alaska's is kind of rare in the fact that its compliance requirements are really very friendly. And so you do have to file with the state. It's $150, and there are certain disclosures you have to make, and there's a template online. And then I think you wait 14 days or some waiting period, and then you may start offering securities. So whatever you've decided, if it's a tiny share of your company or you want to just offer debt notes, ask people to give you a loan. It can be as low as $100. It could be lower. And you choose how much money you need to raise. You have to do a minimum, some sort of a like, okay, I really do need at least $10,000 or at least $100,000, but I want to raise $250,000. So you have to have a minimum. There's certain particular other requirements. You know, there's some details to this. And then you can stand up in a room full of people. You can put on a website. So long as you're speaking directly to Alaskans, you can ask them to invest in your company, which before this law was passed was illegal.
And what about the law is in place about what the return must be, or right. You know, what are the ranges of what people can offer?
So there's no requirement, and there's no limits. There's no rule. There's nothing that says you have to offer 5% interest, or there's no requirements. She's just furrowing her brow. You should see this. It's really fantastic. It's like, wait, what? So there's no requirements, but what the investor protections that are built into this really are about the caps. So a person like you or I, and that means we are, we like to say ordinary people turned into extraordinary investors, but basically the 99%, right? We aren't wealthy. And accredited investors, meaning you're worth $1 million, not including your home and blah, blah, blah. There's some other things about that. But those are typically what might be construed as angels. But so ordinary folks can only invest up to $10,000 per person per company, which is that's the highest in the country. Still pretty high. In Oregon, it's only $2,500. But the way the regulatory entities in each state look at this is that's actually an investor protection. So it is risky, just like investing in anything else, especially investing in small businesses. But when you are a co-owner or invested in a company that's down the street or in your town, you're more likely to visit that company. You're more likely to get other people to visit that company because you're invested. So it is live and legal in Alaska, and there are places where you can go to get more information. There's a 7-page frequently asked questions that we'll make sure we
absolutely
get on your website.
Yeah, Amy Cortez.
Yeah, I'd love to add to that because you talked about the investor limits, but on the low end, I mean, you know, first of all, the entrepreneur has complete discretion to set the terms of their deals. Maybe they want to offer a loan, maybe they want to offer a revenue share, maybe it's, you know, shares in the company. But And they also can set a minimum investment. So in many cases, especially with the Jobs Act regulation crowdfunding, you can invest as little as $50 or $100, you know, so you don't have to be anywhere near those, you know, $10,000 limits. And that's really what it's all about, is being very accessible to anybody who feels moved to support this business because it's, you know, they want to see it in their neighborhood, or, you know, they believe in their mission, or, you know, there's a whole host of reasons why they want to participate. And, you know, the financial considerations are not always the first, you know, most primary reason.
When you say you can offer shares, really, how does that work? I thought that companies had to get to a certain level before they could actually do a public offering of shares.
Yeah, and so that's where it gets complicated, as Amy was saying. But very simply, right, we're talking about securities here, and a security is anything where you're putting money in and you're expecting to hopefully make some money back based on the efforts of that person or entrepreneur. So, and really, it could be anything. But yeah, you could be an LLC and offer units in your company, or, you know, you could offer shares in your private company. That's what, you know, Silicon Valley startups are doing. Well, the same thing is true for any type of startup.
Jasmine, are you working with folks who are looking at this law in Alaska, new law in Alaska, and operating under it, or has it not been in place long enough?
So they had a couple of presentations about it. So the state's actually done a really good job about trying to get the word out about that new platform and new option. I think the area that we were really interested in was basically being the translator. So we know it's a good platform. We know that it's within our state. We know that it's more flexible. So the area that we've found working with people is they're interested in it. They're just trying to find out, how does it work? What does it look like? How do I get started? So we're more so focused on like the logistical side of it. But based off what we've heard so far and seen in the presentations and with our people, they're really excited about it and they're interested. It's more of like the what's next?
How do we do this?
Right. So I know what it is. I get it for the simple sense of how it's good and it can help. So how do we go about it? And we followed the restaurant out of Sitka and kind of their journey and what it looks like for, I think it's Baranoff, is it?
Baranoff.
Yeah, and what they've been doing, and we've seen them on social media. So the interest is there. I think the main thing right now is like the what's next and how do we implement it and act on it. And from a business boutique standpoint, you know, our focus is how can we take the law and take the processes and put it in a simplified how-to for our people so they know how to actually utilize it and you know, take advantage of it?
1-800-478-8255 is the number if you'd like to join our conversation. If you have a question about how to get a small business idea off the ground, as Kurt did earlier, 1-800-478-8255. In Anchorage, the number is 550-8422. 550-8422. So what are the three of you, what can you tell me about how business investing is perhaps changing percentage-wise? Are banks still the largest sources of funds for small operators, or are private investors more where it's at now for startups? Any way to really know how to parse that?
I actually don't know the statistics about banks, but I know that crowdfunding has exceeded the amount of money going into companies. It's exceeded, it's passed angels. So there's definitely a trend, and right, I think Amy should probably address some of the statistics and the trends broadly as well. That would be helpful.
Well, thanks, Amy, but I'm not sure I have all this at my fingertips.
Used to doing interviewing, you could tell.
Yeah, I mean, back to the, you know, what we were saying at the beginning. I mean, the problem is that there's been so much concentration in the bank industry, and you know, if you saw a chart, it's like straight downwards. And so a lot of the small banks, which have really been the anchors of community lending, both to small local businesses and families, are being gobbled up by bigger banks. I think Bank of Alaska, right, which was founded in 1916, one of those pillars of the economy, is now owned by Wells Fargo. And I doubt they're doing a lot of that kind of local lending, only because big banks just are not equipped to. I mean, they have to do bigger loans. There's a whole host of things that happen, which end up making bank loans more difficult to get. So that said, there are SBA loans, and you know, there's still a lot of that happening, but there's so much activity, I think, happening with alternative finance, both crowdfunding, but also new kinds of angel investor groups, and even new venture capital funds. Like my favorite is Arlen Hamilton. She just started the, she's a venture capitalist, and she started the It's About Damn Time Fund to invest in women of color entrepreneurs. So there's, I think it's a great time to be an entrepreneur because there are all of these new options that are starting to bubble up, but you kind of have to know where to look.
Well, in Alaska, we've been in a down economy, a recession for a few years. It's debatable. Some economists think we may be bottoming out, maybe starting to start going back up. It's hard to say. It's being watched and discussed. The conference is happening, this Vitalize Alaska conference seems to be happening at an interesting time in that respect. Are there opportunities in a down economy that really stand out to you that maybe local small entrepreneurs can take advantage of? I'm seeing a lot of nodding about that.
Definitely.
Jasmine, you're right here. What, you know, right in Anchorage.
Well, truthfully, I mean, from a consultant standpoint, you know, in down economy, our business doubles because everyone's like, oh, my gosh, the economy's bad. I have to survive. I need a consultant. So for me, you know, I do see the business difference. But, you know, even with the down economy, I think it makes people take their business more serious and understand the importance of their business. So when everything is going good and it's kind of more of an option, you look at it differently than like this is a need and I have to do this. So I think it opens up more opportunities, but it also helps those entrepreneurs and those business owners take their business more seriously because they have to, you know, they need to get through it. So I think it leads to more consistency and the desire for longevity, like longevity and balance, because they know, you know, it's not steady right now in our economy. So it makes them want to do better and see it through because they know what's at risk.
And they also, I imagine people have to get a little more creative in their thought.
Right.
If there's not as many jobs available, might have to make my own.
Yep.
Amy Cortese?
Yeah, I think it's a really exciting opportunity for Alaska. And as they say, necessity is the mother of innovation, right? And last year, across Alaska, there were more than 1,000 new ventures created. So I think, you know, people are recognizing that. But, you know, you have such unique and challenging issues here. Remote populations, extreme weather, you know, you're importing like 95% of your food. These are all entrepreneurial opportunities. And later on today, we'll be at the Launch Alaska Day. And I'm really excited to meet some of the startups and homegrown companies that will be there. There's the whole Arctic tech scene, which I find super intriguing. And one thing that I'm going to mention in my talk tomorrow, I'm going to try and be a little inspiring, is that, you know, a recession is actually a really good time to start a business. More than half of the Fortune 500 were companies were founded during some sort of economic downturn or bear market.
Really?
Yep.
Why is that? Why would that be such a successful time? It seems counterintuitive.
Yeah, it does. And maybe it's happenstance. But, you know, also, I don't know, perseverance. But I think there is opportunity. People are so focused on other things. And the hallmark of an entrepreneur is they see an opportunity and a challenge and they go for it. And, you know, challenges abound during those periods.
Amy Pearl, will you help me better understand when you say crowdfunding? It seems like that's lumping a lot of things together. Is it or is it not? Help us understand the distinctions between what people, I think, at least from my perspective, think of when they think of crowdfunding.
Yeah.
You think of what we know about the online
Kickstarter,
GoFundMe, other, there's a few other ones out there, but that's not what you're talking
about.
No,
it's definitely not what we're talking about. And so Kickstarter, you know, is pretty much of a shocking, you know, here, give a bunch of people who have, no experience and are not a nonprofit, your money for free. Like, people, like, there's no way that would get off the ground. But it,
and
it,
yeah,
did.
It did.
You know, and it was initially started a lot of art projects and film and record and a lot of things that were sort of, you know, damn the men, we're going to do this and it's going to be great. You know, and you're going to help me do it because I can't get money anywhere else. So, but I think that people are a little over it. You know, a lot of companies have done really rather well based on all this money they've gotten for free. And then people are like, hey, where's my return, man? You're doing great. I didn't get any
of
that
was
action.
A t-shirt.
Right. All I got was a damn t-shirt. So maybe with luck. But, I mean, some of them have done it is a really great place to try and test a market. You can do that as well. But what we really are talking about, so you have to, you know, think about it as a, you know what an IPO is, right? I mean, we sort of nod our head. We don't really know what an IPO is, but,
yeah, I'm
but we've
nodding,
heard of it, right? Exactly. It's like, I think. Or
wanting
no.
to pretend I know.
Yeah. Well, you know, so that's a national big, costs millions of dollars to do, and it's what big
initial
wealth.
So that's
an initial public offering.
So that's what I think I was getting to about offering stock or equity.
But
in
you can offer
It's blurring
stock.
The lines for sure.
Yeah, okay. And it's smaller. So in Oregon, we call it a community public offering or a CPO. So we say it's just a baby IPO. And really, that's really what it is. It's a baby IPO. You don't have to register your security with the federal government like you would, or with the SEC like you would have to do in a major IPO. You just register that offering document, your materials, with your state. So it's the word is intrastate. So that's what's the 38 states. So crowdfunding, it's best to think of it as crowd investing. And one of the things that you talked about, like even in Alaska in a downturn, if, you know, you think, well, great, I can use this tool because I can't get loans from a bank or anyone else. But why are people in Alaska who may be struggling going to invest in my company? And the answer is generally it's not that much money.
Mm-hmm.
So that provides for a lot of little, which adds up. And it also shares the risk. So it spreads the risk around. Instead of me putting all my money into your company or a big chunk of change, if I lose $100, you know, I got this company to stay on its feet for a little bit longer. And maybe that entrepreneur got strong enough to where he opened a company that really did do well. So there's reasons why this is a really an interesting opportunity to think about investing in an entirely new way.
We're going to find out more about that in just a moment. We're going to take a quick break as Talk of Alaska continues statewide.
Today's program is underwritten in part by Wells Fargo, offering financial tools to start, run, and grow a business. Learn more at wellsfargoworks.com.
I want to go to the phones in just a moment, but I wanted to follow up Amy Pearl on one thing, and that is if people, beyond just kind of the excitement of saying, hey, I'm going to, you know, buy a lottery ticket sort of and just invest in this business and maybe it'll pay off, maybe it won't, but it's kind of fun just to help support someone locally and to imagine the what ifs if it goes big. Are there other advantages, though? If it doesn't go big, can people write that off or something? Or what happens? Or is it just kind of a risk that you're assuming?
Yes. I mean, it's exactly like any other investment in many cases that you would do. Certainly not. There's some obviously more secure, you know, from an investment perspective.
Sure.
But in terms of being an investor in a company, what happened in Oregon, so you'd have someone pitch to a room full of, you know, local folks, and someone would come forward and say, I'm going to invest. I'm going to write you a check. I'm going to do it right now. And they'd write a check for, let's say, maybe $500. And they now own 5 shares of this particular company. Let's say it is a baseball bat company in Oregon. It's the guy makes the strongest wooden baseball bat in the world. Amazing. And all of a sudden, that woman would go, wait, can you take my picture? Take my picture. And they'd stand next to the entrepreneur and they're like, I actually own part of that company. And it had this really interesting transformative effect on people suddenly saying, I'm a part of this economy. I'm actually an investor. I just did that. I know how this works. I read this prospectus. I made a decision. And I'm standing next to the founder And I can always go visit. I can go. He's talking to me. So we talk about the investment process of due diligence. You know, you can ground truth.
Sure.
What is this company for real? You know, what do other people say about them? And I can go visit the place if there's a place. And so there's some. I would say it's really. We talk about entrepreneurs getting money into the hands of entrepreneurs, but from my perspective, the fact that ordinary folks are now actually participating in the economy in a very powerful way has all kinds of other benefits, well as just, I hope I get my 5%.
And also a greater sense of community cohesion
and resilience.
Can I add to that a little bit? Mm-hmm. I mean, just to give like a macro view, small businesses, so private companies, small private businesses represent half the economy, right? Half of GDP. They employ roughly half the non-governmental workforce. Yet we are 100% invested in large publicly traded corporations, because that's all we've been able to invest in for so long, right, until these recent laws. So in a way, it's really just diversifying your investments and, you know, investing in your local economy, which for reasons we've discussed is so important. And the other thing I think is that we have such a huge problem in this country with inequality, wealth inequality, income inequality. And so if we start this shift where people can invest locally, keep wealth in their community, and, you know, hopefully if all goes well, they're the ones getting the profits, not some, you know, big fat VC who doesn't really need more profits, but, you know, really keeping it in the community and growing community wealth. I think that's so important. And, you know, it's sort of the long-term vision, I think, behind some of these laws.
Let's go to the phones for a moment. Mark is in Anchorage. Hi, Mark.
Hi, this is Mark Butler. I'm the chair of the Spinard Farmers Market, and I wanted to mention a sector of the economy up here in Alaska that's growing very strongly that I didn't hear in the part of the program I heard today, and that's agriculture and local agriculture. It's very entrepreneurial. It's very manufacturing-focused. People that used to bring to our market kale and such are now chopping up the kale, manufacturing it into jellies and jams and doing different things like that. And selling their products increasingly. There's more and more farmers markets, Muldoon, South, Center, and so forth. And these markets sell only Alaska caught, Alaska grown, and Alaska made products. So whether it's a handicrafter or someone like Dipper Donuts who's sourcing agricultural products from other vendors at the market and putting it into their donuts that are made locally here. It's a huge opportunity for entrepreneurs because so much of ours is so transportation intensive. So much of our food is it comes from very far away. And so I think this is a wonderful opportunity for people to get involved. We've seen increasingly at our vendors at Spinard Market, we've seen more and more people who are quitting corporate jobs and going and starting an agriculture business in the valley. So I encourage everyone to go and buy locally because that supports growers and manufacturers.
Thank you, Mark. Did a great job of succinctly making the pitch that all of us have been discussing here today. Let's go to Hank and Palmer. Hi, Hank. Hello, Hank. Hank, maybe left. All right. Well, I wanted to ask about the horizon for trends for small businesses. What do you see? Jasmine, let me start with you. Do you think getting a small business off the ground is easier or harder in Alaska? And maybe based on this law that was passed in 2016, it's changed some. But what do you think?
I would say, I'd say in two different hats. From inside experience, based off working with other states, it is easier simply because Alaska is a newer state, and therefore we don't have as many historical barriers or too many doors to access. Our population is lower, therefore that distribution of resources goes a little bit further. We don't have 5 degrees of separation up here. We have like 1.5. So it's a little bit faster to get the people you have to see, talk to, you have to talk to access what you have to access. So I would say in that capacity, it is easier. And Alaska is an ideal place to start a business because you don't have as many barriers to entry. Naturally, any entrepreneur is going to tell you, no, it's not easy to start a business. You know, it's like a child. There's not open and, you know, closed days, office hours. It's 24/7.
All the time.
Like, you know, and I totally get it. You know, like I have a business, but I'm also a parent, you know, a single parent of twins. They're three. They run me, but there's not an offer on day. So an entrepreneur would say, no, it's not easy. But I would say for Alaskans, we should definitely count our blessings because I've worked in a lot of other states and, you know, it's a lot more saturated. So we still have those opportunities to get where we have to get and access what we have to access without a lot of competition and barriers.
All right, we're going to take one more really quick call. Joe is in Anchorage. Joe, we only have a couple of minutes, so get to your question quickly, please.
No, I just want to say, hi, guys. This is Joe Morrison with the 49th State
hey,
Angel
Joe.
Fund.
Oh. Hey.
It's so awesome to hear this conversation today, and I just wanted to advocate for Alaska's crowdfunding law. It's an amazing law. And I also wanted to point out that Jasmine Smith has been doing some work in Mountain View with Anchorage Community Land Trust, an amazing program called Set Up Shop that funds micro-entrepreneurs. So
definitely,
we're funding all kinds of entrepreneurs in our community at all kinds of different finance levels. And a quick word about the Vitalize Alaska Conference tomorrow. Like half those panels are about financing. Yeah. So there are great panels on crowdfunding that you can hear from the Amys on. there's equity panels that I'm running. There's going to be a lenders panel. So, you know, the right financing answer for you is really important as you seek to grow your business and fund your business. And I think the Vitalize Alaska Conference will have you covered. That's it.
Thank you very much, Joe. That was another good, succinct call. In our final minute, I wanted to ask about how people get started at all. Should they, is there a place on the state website that's aggregating the information, Jasmine, or is there a place where people can go look at potential offerings that there's, you know, someone that's bringing together the people who have business ideas and they can go say, hey, I'll invest in that or that.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of different platforms. Like I know one that I was actually, you know, just looking at with the Vitalize, you know, Alaska Startups. I know Nigel and the economic department at UAA, they're doing a great job at like linking resources and trying to unify the resources. Naturally, if you go to SBDC's website, they have some links to some of the resources that they work with as well. I know the SBA has some lists. So if you go to those three main groups, they do have some accesses to those lists. But I would definitely say Alaska Startups has a really good, comprehensive and thought out list in terms of where you can go. And it breaks it down everything from if you want training to consulting to funding. And of course, there's a lot to add. But, you know, I definitely give them props for starting that conversation and getting that list going.
All right. Well, we will get some links together. We'll put them at alaskapublic.org with this Talk of Alaska posting. Thanks so much to my guests, Amy Cortez, Amy Pearl, and Jasmine Smith. Thanks for our callers and listeners today, and we'll be back next week. Thanks to Dave Waldron and Wesley Early. I'm Lori Townsend. Thanks for listening.
Talk of Alaska is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The Southeast Alaska Regional Health Consortium featured open positions include CMAs and LPNs for our primary care clinics in Southeast Alaska. Come work for CIRC and contribute to your community. Enjoy full benefits, paid time off, and retirement savings. CIRC is looking for someone like you. For more information, visit CIRC.org/jobs. That's SEARHC.org/jobs to apply. This message sponsored by the Southeast Alaska Regional Health Consortium.
This program is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400. This is Alaska Public Media.